Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper.
Hey, I don't want to start this off wrong, but like, what? This needs to sound better. Right? What cultural group of people say "may"? You don't say
"may"? Because like M A N G, "mang"?
Yeah, yeah. So because at the beginning of the tune sounds like. I'm a working man. You know what I'm saying? It sounds like what? it says it with a slur bit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were doing like my like a
yeah yeah like that yeah, yeah, yeah that's right like a so trucker.
I think that's Latino.
I think there's quite a few of them.
Yeah, but those, these guys are Canadian.
Yeah.
Maybe Canadians are a cultural group that use that.
Or hey, man, I don't know.
Really not a cultural group.
I don't know how to carry on a conversation with a Canadian Latino.
No.
I just like to have Canadians say the word about as many times as possible.
Have them say full. Also.
Boat? Boat? I can't even do
what's that, Dan?
A boat.
It sounds like he's calling for a boat that's on its way.
I don't even know if you can racially profile Canadians. I feel like, you've done it.
That's right. It's just the way they speak. I love their
a
voice
inflection.
Isn't it a boot?
A boot?
A boot?
I can't even do it.
Take it easy,
I can listen to it, and I can't even say it back to them. You mean a boot? A boat?
I thought it was a boot and like foam and stuff like that.
I talk to a lot of fellas for work from Minnesota, and they do that. And I think they're making it funny. Hey, what's funny? I will say stuff where I'm at.
I thought of a joke somebody told me once.
Yeah.
It's great.
I said, take it easy, man. I said, that sounds like an Alabama trucker to me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I picked up a full load of tomatoes, man.
No, yeah. I think it's quite a few different cultural groups that do it. Huh. Is there like a rapper, Gucci Mane?
What? You're just saying it funny.
No, that's legitimately his name. It's M-A-N-E, Gucci Mane. M-A-N-E.
Yeah, but
that's Mane.
Gucci Mane.
Well, that's the same concept we're talking about. He's...
No,
Mike's the twang on the end of Mike.
Mike's got like a hard G on it, and like a guy that's too lazy to finish it out. It's like Mike,
yeah. Like
anybody
he was going to say it,
G
and then
proper is just sad.
Yeah, he thought of something else, and then he's like, "Yeah, forget it."
Hey, my ow.
Yeah.
All right, you're listening live from the past. That was the tops of what we have going on tonight.
Welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, go go hug your wife and go to bed. All right, so Booba, you had some suspected Pope stuff.
Yeah, that you can call me out on later.
Yeah, I just need to prepare.
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
But what are you mulling over?
How
what might it be about?
How to. Be honest about an answer that you get from God that you did not want.
Oh, yeah.
Because I ran into a situation where something like, I'm not great at prayer. I'm terrible at consistent prayer. The whole prayer without ceasing, I'm awful at. And when I really get into the business on prayer, I get into a very, very weird place where I'm almost unrighteously expecting something from God.
Because you've been working really hard, and so he owes it to you, kind of?
Yeah, and I always try and catch myself when I get there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, I've definitely gotten there with this.
You don't know how spiritual I've been, God.
Right, exactly. It's like, God, do you realize this is the first time I've actually done what you asked me to do? Come on.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. And,
hey, man, don't mind at God.
Yeah, Booba.
Hey, man, here's the deal.
I got Pope style advice. You watch how you speak to the Lord.
Sometimes I need to catch myself with that, too. I said holy cats in a prayer today.
No, I think that's all right.
I was praying aloud. I said, holy cats, that's
like
a sweet
the Lion
deal, God.
Of Judah?
Yeah, the Lion of Judah is holy cats.
Very similar.
But how do you respond to that with respect and still honoring God? And be human about it and be upset.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, that sounds similar to what you were talking about.
Yeah. One of the questions that we had on the docket today was what do you do when God doesn't answer?
Uh-huh.
So maybe we'll just theme of the show your responses to God.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, all right. How do you actually respond to, like, and sometimes this is hard for us to sort out because, like, you meet some people that seem to be like, hey, God, I was thinking about going here. What do you think? Yes, go ahead. And then they do it. And you're like, what? Every time I answer, it's like,
yeah.
you're waiting for a book to fall off the shelf, and you're like, does that book say King of Paris? Because then I'm going to Paris like I asked.
Yeah.
You know, like, some people seem to hear from God, you know, in a fairly clear and concise manner, and then there's, like, the other giant portion of the Christian population that's like, I don't know, the cat came by after I was praying, and I'm like, I think that means we should get more cats. Or
does that mean Egypt? Okay.
That's, I just don't know.
That's true. Like, I have the sense, like, it just feels like some people are just like, hey, Papa, how should I eat? Taco truck. And I'm like, this is not the relationship I have with Jesus.
Yeah. Well, see, and the problem is like, my first instinct is to tend to not believe them. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I think you're making this up. Just and some of that.
I heard Jesus say taco truck. So, I'm hesitant.
Some of that's because, like, because of this show. Like, we've had a lot of folks come in here, and they're like, I was praying, and the Holy Spirit told me I was going to be a stellar musician. I was going to make millions of blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I don't know if the Holy Spirit said that to you. Right? Yeah. And then here we are, like, you know, 6 years later, like, you're not the star like you said. Was the Holy Spirit telling lies? You know what I'm saying? Like, and so now I'm real careful when I feel like I've heard from God on something. I tell, like, five people. You know what I'm saying? I don't tell everybody. I tell, like, five people.
Be careful.
And it's mostly just to bounce it off them. Like, does that sound legit? Am I making stuff up? what's really going on here? But then the best part you do is you find that the one that talks to Jesus in a regular conversational type basis, and then you tell them the story, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's definitely Jesus. yeah, go with that. And so, we'll talk about that a little bit. Just like your response to God in good things and bad things. Like, how do you actually relate to this God? Like, you can learn about him by reading the Bible. You can meet his people who have had interactions with him. But, like, what does that actually mean to you when you're praying for something or even trying to start a relationship with God, and you're like, you know what, I feel like it's gray and coming back empty, and I'm talking to the ceiling, and it doesn't matter what hand motion I do or how far I put my face down on the floor, I'm just kind of going through the motions because I don't know what's going on.
Right.
So, we'll talk about that. That's a good conversation.
Okay.
We're also going to debut what I like to call Nick Harris's Corner, which I have no idea what he's going to say. No clue.
I'm excited.
At all. But Nick Harris come in here every week smiling it up, and I just think we need more of him in our life.
You got, so, Harris, you got like 20 minutes to put something together. Put the think on it.
Okay. I mean, that's a good topic, what we're speaking on right now.
Okay. Nick Harris is trying to take the show's main topic and put it in Nick Harris's corner.
I mean, it's a good topic.
That's pretty cheap living, Nick Harris. Well, as long as y'all are already talking about it, here's the deal.
I mean, there's a lot of things you can talk about, but I mean, today, like what you said, today, I mean, the topic is great because, I mean, I could put it in my life and, you know, that's something that I would talk about. So
okay,
perfect.
All right, so maybe it's possible that Nick Harris's corner will be swallowed up by the other conversation. We'll just be ready for it.
We'll see.
Okay,
I'd like to talk about tonight maybe disappointment in God.
Okay,
I'm just saying that because it's pretty much what everybody else is saying.
Sweet.
I really.
So that's something else in Dan's corner.
Sorry,
Dan. Right. Okay, hold on. Everyone else has put it in a very positive light. Dan is disappointed with God.
I'm a realist.
Why didn't you just say taco truck?
Hey, can anybody flip to the end of Job for me for Dan? There might be something in there for him.
You didn't mention the E. coli.
Hey, you know, I've listened to two or three people, like from some podcasts and interviews of people talking about the book of Job.
Oh, man.
And, like, I've had a couple guys, like, both of these fellas said something to the extent of, you know, you didn't see God actually admonish Job for his reaction. And I thought, you are not reading the same book.
They got bored, never made it to the end.
Yeah, like, I mean, they picked out like the, or they just skipped to the end. And, like, you know, God describes Job as a faithful servant.
Right.
God does react to what Job has done in a seemingly positive way. But, like, there is certainly a line of chapters of which Job is getting it handed to him.
He literally says, gird your loins and answer as a man, doesn't he?
Yeah.
See, what they're envisioning is like, God was dealing with Job, and then when he gets on his throne and starts saying, here's the deal, he pushes Job aside and then just looks at the audience and begins to speak of the depths of the ocean
elsewhere.
And how fawns give birth in some thicket.
Do you know where the snow is kept?
I just think they shafted the discussion with Job. Like, there was some nuance to this conversation between God and Job, and they were like, even through all of this, notice that God, you know, wasn't really admonishing Job, or, you know, he wasn't against Job. And I'm like, I mean, he certainly put him in his place. Can we at least get right on that?
Hey, man, first time I ever read through Job, I was really kind of worried the first 34 chapters. And I was like, this Job guy is not going to do very great in life.
No.
Like, he's not going to do too well. And then when I got to God just basically saying, hey, man, stand and be counted. You will, I will question you and you will answer as a man. I kid you not. As I was reading, I was standing on my bed.
Yeah.
Like, I legitimately stood on my bed, and I was like, heck yeah, God, get him. You get him. I've listened to 34 chapters of whining. You best get him.
Actually, that is my book of humility, but not from putting myself in Job's place. But as I read it, I find myself finding the friends are reasonable.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, yeah, no, that's pretty solid advice. And then it's obviously not solid advice, and I think, I have learned nothing. I need help reading the Bible correctly.
That is why the very last three chapters of Job are impactful as they are, right?
Yeah. Because
I've tried to just read those three chapters before, like get to it like as a quick energy bump.
Uh-huh.
No, it doesn't work like that. You got to go through the drivel of the friends.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And which this kills me because like I found that their initial reaction to Job, I actually apply in my own life, right? Like, where they just show up and shut their mouths and sit there with them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like when bad stuff really happens, they sat there in silence for like days.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? That sounds like good advice. And every time the worst of the worst has happened to people around me, I say absolutely nothing. I throw a hug at them and then I stare at them and I might swear. But that's it. That's pretty much all I got.
Hey man, you've never hugged me.
You haven't had real bad things happen.
Whoa.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to bring it heavier. I mean, real bad things, but
we'll see what happens. All right.
Okay.
I remember the first time I read Job, I was like angry at the middle chapters. Like, who are these idiots? Why is this in the Bible? Who put this in the Bible? Because you figure, well, it's in the Bible, it's got to be true.
Right.
Yeah.
Not, it's in the Bible because some idiot said this and it's really stupid advice. Until you get to the end, you're like, oh, okay.
You never had the issue, because like the second time I read it, I did start to sit in the friend's camp. I'm like, hey man, these guys are making some kind of sense.
That was the first time I read it.
Yeah. Oh, these guys, like, because the first time I read it, I already knew they were stupid, right? I already knew from hearing random bits of the story throughout my life that like, these guys are wrong. And so I read that into it. And then the second time I read it, I'm like, I don't know, they don't seem that unreasonable. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, and you know, and they kind of caught me on. I'm like, yeah, listen to Bildad. You know, Bildad making good sense. And then that Z character, who I always forget his name, he only shows up every once in a while and really does some heavy lifting. But like, now the third time around, when I go back through it, I'm like, no, you guys are wrong, and you were born wrong.
You fools.
I don't like anything you're saying. Yeah, Book of Job. That's good stuff.
All right. What else? I had something else. Run it. Yeah, I have some. It's not necessarily. Well, yeah, it's Pope style. I run a tight ship. That's my Pope style advice. You got to run it. It's a good idea to run a tight ship. So we'll get to that.
Okay. We also have. Well, Nick Harris has got his own corner firing up. He's painting the walls and putting furniture in.
Okay. Wait, you ready to go? Can you give us a preview, Nick?
Can you preview the corner?
Yeah, I can do that. Basically, like the topic will be about God's unfailing love, basically. And, you know, like, we supposed to love people the same way God would love us. And, I mean, I think that's one of the most hardest things that can happen. You know, like, if you don't really
okay, wait,
understand.
Now, don't give away the farm, Nick Harris.
Okay.
You were a preview. Okay. Got it. Unfailing love of God.
Unfailing love of God.
And that's hard stuff. Okay, coming back. That's coming up later in Nick's corner.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Okay. All right. Hey, we got plenty of stuff on the table here. Let's see. I tell you what, I'll do my Pope style, and then Boova, I think maybe we'll shift into yours, and that'll touch on the stuff Mike was talking about.
Dear Life from the Path.
What? No,
what?
I'm gonna go first.
Hey man, if you don't know what the Pope style advice is, what's happened is people in the local pubs have intentionally and in a wrong way told people that Ben is the Pope.
Can I interrupt real quick?
No.
What are you doing in the local pubs, Boova?
Hey, man.
Playing pool?
People need Jesus in the local pubs, too.
Okay. That's all I wanted to hear, is that you were doing good things.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, they went there to drown their sorrows, and I prefer they drown in living water.
Exactly. Like, hey, man, you know what's going to quench your thirst more than that beer? Jesus.
Hold on a second, man.
Hey, man, don't drink that.
Let me tell you something. Okay, go
so
ahead.
So people have mistakenly told other people that that Ben is the Pope. So there's a couple of drunks, if you will, at this point in time that have...
Let's just call them what they are. They're drunk.
Totally. They have stumbled their way onto Ben's lawn and will not leave until he gives some kind of papal wisdom that has to apply to his life as well. So he's trying to get people off his lawn. This is Pope-style advice.
Pope-style advice from Pope Ben I is you got to tighten up your ship. Like it's you need to run a tight ship. And I ran into this myself this week. When I let one thing start to kind of slide, it's an avalanche of sorts. Like it, especially things that you have to keep a tight rein on. Like I've been trying to exercise. I've been trying to eat correctly. I've been trying to keep my Bible reading up where it needs to be, and also with some kind of my supplementary reading, and then also kind of just the various things that cause me potential grief in my life, where my temptations are at or whatever. Kind of keeping that stuff locked down, and. I've noticed I've been trying to hold all that stuff probably, you know, I've been doing reasonably well over the last 3 or 4 months. But I noticed over the last 2 weeks that as I started to let one thing slip, everything else just kind of fell with it. And kind of the modern Christian gut reaction is, don't be such a Pharisee about this kind of thing. But here's the thing, is like, those fellas aren't completely wrong here. They went with the wrong things, and they pointed people in the wrong direction, and they used it for their own gain. But the truth is that, and we've talked about this before on the show, is that fences are good. Especially if they're your own fences, right? Like, if the Holy Spirit's in you, and he's saying, yeah, it's okay for one guy to act this way, that's not for you. You don't get to do X, Y, and Z, this is where your limits are. And so I recognize that, like, as soon as I started letting my exercise stuff slide, I started eating improperly. My Bible reading stopped being as consistent as it needed to be. And then over time, like, because all those things happened, some of the temptations that otherwise exist in my life started popping up in a way they had not popped up in the last 4 or 5 months. And I think to myself, like, I mean, God is not upset with me because I'm not exercising. He's not upset with me because I'm not, counting calories like I have been, right? But I know where my limits are. And I know personally that, like, if I start kind of slouching on responsibility and things that I'm fully capable of doing, like I'm fully capable of exercising reasonable amounts of times a week, fully capable of not eating or drinking a bunch of soda if I shouldn't, of eating things marginally without going overboard, of reading my Bible like I'm supposed to. Like these are all things that aren't extra things. They're not actually even really hard things. They're easy things to do. But as soon as it's a mental thing that as I start to let go of one thing, those things start to avalanche down and I start losing all of it. And so even when I'm saying, boy, I'm really fighting some temptations this week, what I'll also do is start looking around at kind of my peripheral items and say, like, what else am I letting go of? And it's generally an attitude and a mindset, not a specific behavior. And then once I start kind of praying through and rethinking and checking my accountability and my fences on, the things that I otherwise want in place, everything rises with it. And so, you know, maybe that's not you, or maybe it is you, and you just didn't recognize kind of the correlation to you. But at least for me, from Pope Ben the First style, I got to run a tight ship. Like not saying like I feel this crazy burden of if this doesn't happen, everything falls through. But like, it's generally more of an attitude or a mentality thing than it is a individual action thing. And I can easily recognize that in a number of different things that I have going around. So, you know, keep an eye on your ship. Run it tight. Keep a look around. Notice when things start to fall out. Put the right things in place where people will say, hey, man, I notice that stuff's falling on you. Or I notice this thing isn't happening the way that you wanted it to, because it tends to be a good beacon or a good barometer for other things that are falling out. And that's not God, you know, hamstringing you and saying you're paying back for salvation. That's not a demand to be a Pharisee. It's a right response to right living that says, because of what Jesus has done for me and how he loves me, this is how I react to those things. I steward his gifts responsibly, and I try to react with grace and mercy, and I know that I'm not stewarding it well. If all these things start to fall, then it's an indication of my life. So that's my Pope style advice this week, is run a tight ship.
Yeah, I think that's actually we don't like to think of things in that way, in the all or nothing category, you know. But like, it always took me back a little bit when Paul was talking about the law, and he's like, you want to be accustomed to the law? Great. You break one, you broke the whole thing, as far as I'm concerned. You know what I'm saying? And like, now I always thought that seemed a little harsh. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, you just broke one law. But he's like, no. If that's how you want to get saved and you break one, you're out. You're out. And that, and he was trying to make a point, which is not the same point Ben's making, but the all or nothing is right? Like, either you're driving the boat or you ain't driving it. And there's not a middle. Right, where even in our modern times, when we're talking about you know, distracted driving and texting and all this crap people are doing when they're driving, either you're driving the vehicle or you're not really driving the vehicle. And I think that's kind of what Ben's getting to. If like, are you an active leader and participant in the machine that is Mike Foost? Like, are you driving this car or not? Because if you ain't, something else is driving, or you're drifting in an area and you're not doing it. And so, like, it seems very, very simple and counterintuitive to our grace-filled homogenous, everything is just all right kind of Jesus existence, that you're going to have to actually pick up some rocks and move them. And when you're not, you can expect to run a little bit faster and run a little bit off course. That's pretty good advice, Ben.
Yeah, and like I tell you, I ran into this, like, that came to a head yesterday. As I was thinking back and I watched, is like, I had been running like a crazy man. Like, I went from, like, not being able to run at all to be able to run a 5K over, like, an 8-week time frame because I had the sweet app on my phone that helped me do it. And I started riding bikes. Like, I was going, you know, like, that one bike story. I never got back out to whatever, the 18 or 19 miles.
But, oh, yeah, where you got lost in your presumed death.
Yeah, yeah.
Decided to make
a couple miles away from your house.
So I got up to, like, and this is, I grant, people will ride better than this, but, like, I got to 13 or 14 miles a few times a week. And so, like, I was getting decent amounts of exercise. And then I looked back on the last 2 weeks, and, like, it just slowly started fading away. And then I started eating however I wanted to, and I wasn't reading the way, keeping up with my Bible reading. I had some other study stuff that I was doing, and I wasn't keeping up with that. And some of the stuff, like I said, some temptation stuff just started popping in there. And I'm like, where is this coming from? I haven't run into this for months. And where is this coming from? And I kind of looked at it all and said, it's God's not whipping me over these things individually, right? But, like, I feel like it is calling my attention to say, you gave up at some point. You said, I'm not going to worry about that. And I'm not going to worry about that. And it was kind of a malaise attitude thing. And so this morning, I've been meaning for years to move some of this stuff to, like, the morning. Like, I wish I was reading my Bible in the morning as opposed to trying to do it at night. I can't stay awake. Doing exercise in the morning. Actually, I eating breakfast at home with eggs that we own as opposed to having to buy it from the King of Burgers. And so, like,
he makes good eggs, though, Ben.
I know. That's what I'm saying. He's not Lord of all, but, I mean, he's working on it.
He's Lord of pre-cooked eggs.
He's the Tower of Babel for restaurateurs. he's trying to reach higher than he probably should. So anyway, so I woke up at like 6:40, I don't know, 6:15 or something this morning, and I thought, I need to get up and go exercise. And, like, I could do it some other time. I've done it after the show before. Like, I'll go run and there's nobody out. It don't matter. But, like, I thought, I have to do this this morning. I need to do this this morning to some semblance of control that says, I'm running a tight ship here. And so I got up. I ran. I came home. I read. I ate some eggs that belonged to me. I made coffee at home like I was supposed to instead of buying. Oh, it's fantastic. And here's the thing, is like, not just for though, like, hey, do I feel I made responsible choices? It's just in general saying, I know when my ship starts to turn, and it's not just because temptations are popping up. There's like a few other things that sit beyond that, and it's an attitude thing. And so for me, I got to keep a tight ship.
Yeah, it's the same way with me too, Ben. Like, if I don't set the fences up, like, my daily routine, like, things that go wrong for me, like you said. And it's like an attitude thing, like you said. Like, if I don't wake up and pray and, you know, just go outside and look in the sky and just see a bird and be like, hey, God made that, and it's beautiful.
Yeah,
like,
right,
you
got
to praise him for the things that he created, you know. And I believe, like, if I don't do those things every morning, my whole day will be in shambles. Like, I'm one of those guys that I got to fully depend on God. And if I don't, nothing will go right for me. So it's like, that's why it's so important for me to just wake up and do certain things that I do to bring attention to him. To let them know that I see him, what he's doing. And, you know, like, everybody sees their signs different from other people. You know, God has a way to come to people in a way that they can understand. So,
yeah,
like, when I mess up and I can forget to do those things, like, nothing goes right for me. And I know that.
Yeah.
And then I can just think, like, oh, okay, I missed my prayer that I do at 12 o'clock or, you know, like, something, the routine that I know, like, the things that I set up fences, like, that if I don't do it, it won't work.
And that's the thing. Is like, the risk we run with some of what I'm saying and some of what you're saying, right, is that, like, we make things holy that aren't holy. We say God demands this, or you put it on somebody else as if these are things that they have to do. And, like, that isn't the intention. But, like, I do think, and this is where I think what you and I are saying, is that, like, I know well enough in my relationship with God what keeps me focused on the right things and what doesn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Those could be different for certain people. And it doesn't mean that, like, you have to do the same things I do or have to do the same things that you do, right? But, like,
mm-hmm.
When you get to know somebody, when I get to know my wife, like, I know the behaviors that cause me separation for her, even if it's not just offensive to her. I just know there's things that I do that otherwise aren't enriching that relationship, and there's things that I can stay away from that otherwise help. And so, like, just kind of knowing what those things are and keeping an eye on them, and not because you have to, but because you want to. That's the point of the spiritual disciplines, right? I pray because I want to. I read because I want to. Mm-hmm. These are all positive things in your life. And so it's, you can take in the same action. You just reorient the desire that says, I want to be doing this. Like, you don't have to tell me to pray without ceasing. I want to be talking to you. You know? Yeah. And so like, I think that's kind of what I'm getting at, and that's kind of what I think what you're saying too.
So after listening to that discussion, I've written down some things I'd like to add to my life after you guys have listed some of these things. One is the definition of malaise.
did Nick Harris use that word?
No. No. Two.
I told him to stop using words like that.
Number two, any amount of supplementary reading. I don't even have any to fail at.
Just do the required stuff first.
Yeah. Ben says, I got to catch up on my supplementary reading. And I thought, what is that? what does that do? I don't even know what that entails.
Is he taking supplements while he's reading? What's happening?
I mean, you just read the bottle and take them. You know what I'm saying? It shouldn't be that big of a deal. Number three, Nick Harris's simple but powerful love of God's creation.
Right.
Like, I never
see a bird.
I never stroll outside and be like, yeah, man, this is right on. I'm always like, it's too hot outside, or I don't like this weather, or I wish it wasn't spitting rain, or I'm upset. As soon as I walk out the door, Nick Harris goes outside, smiles, three birds right on his shoulder. He's like, yeah, God's creation. I gotta change some stuff.
Yeah, that's how it goes for me. Like, if I don't,
that's exactly how
like,
it happens.
I read the things that God favors, and like, I ran across some stuff that he, like, you know, like, it was a passage I was reading, and it say, like, when you, it's a certain way that you talk to him to get his attention, you know, like, and God never talks to nobody, like, through voice, so it's like, I look for signs.
Yeah.
So it's like, when I pray and do certain things, I see signs, and I wait for them, you know, like, it's sort of like you waiting on a piece of man to come, like, I know it's coming soon, you know, like, so it's like, I pay attention to every single detail of the day, like, from the time that I asked him for something to the time that it happens, and I know it's going to happen, so.
See,
you know,
now,
like, I live for the signs.
I love that, right? Because that, like, that shows that, like, you have faith that God is going to answer. And maybe that parlays into a little bit of our question, right? But, like, in the opposite of your example, I ask for all kinds of crap, and then I forget about it. Yeah. I didn't write it down. You know, I'm like, man, Lord, pray for blah, 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 blah.
Maybe.
Yeah, you know, I prayed because someone said I probably should. I'm like, okay, I'm in. I'll pray for that. And then I don't wait to see what happened. I don't, you know what I'm saying? I'm not involved. I'm not intentional about it. To figure out what God has done. And, like, some of that is because we agree to pray for any and everything, which we have, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's going to sound bad. There's nothing wrong with praying for lots of stuff, right? But, like, I do believe if you're going to be able to do that with any type of integrity and to be able to actually watch God do something, you might have to pay attention to what you're praying for. So I don't think it's unlimited. I think there is a certain amount, you know, with like your aunt's best friend's, you know, cousin's dog or something that it would get back in the vet. I'm like, you know, I could pray for that, but I mean, I got some big stuff going on right now. And like, you know, I'm still praying for my daughter's husband's, future husband's and stuff. Like, you know, my standard list of stuff that we're talking about. And like, I don't know if I can get involved in this dog thing right now and actually watch God come through.
You know, our kids aren't like that. They ask you for $10. They're going to sit there and stare at it. At you until they get an answer.
That's right. Where's my $10?
I mean, I used to, when they were young, trying to come up with these, you know, ambiguous answers. Well, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I never really answer it, and they'd still just stare at me like, is that a yes or a no?
Is the $10 coming?
Well,
$10 does exist in my pocket right now.
You know.
But then, you know, it's a certain way how you talk to God, though. You know, like, you can't ask for specific things. Like, if I was in need of money or whatnot, I would ask God, like, God, can you show me a sign that, like, an opportunity to make something happen, you know, like, instead of asking God, like, please, I need $500 to get something fixed, I ask God, like, can you give me an opportunity to make something happen that I need to make happen, you know, like, it's a certain way you ask, and it's not really asking him, it's really giving him the opportunity to, and, you know, to help you, basically, you know, like, inviting him in your life to really do his job, and, like, he's not going to do the whole thing for you, but he kind of will. Like, you
I mean,
know, you
could
take the first step, and everything else is let him work, you know? So it's a certain way how you ask for things from him to really see that he's working in your life.
Yeah, and see, that's cool because it's not like there's a formula to it, but you ask in a certain way when you understand who he is and who you are, right? Right? Like, it's a perspective thing that changes the way that you ask, not like a set of phrases or something out of Psalms. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. That's a perfect example. That's acknowledging who he is versus who you are, and then saying, can you just let me see where my opportunity is to get this done? Because this is what I'm after. That's cool. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I keep thinking that I need to keep a prayer journal, simply because I need to be reminded, just like the Israelites failed often to remember what God has done. I think I run into the same problem.
That's the beauty of those. You can always look and see exactly what you asked and exactly what God answered.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at it. Terrible. Yeah. I can go about 4 days on a journal.
Right.
Then it's gone.
I was gonna say, I think I've gone a total of 3 so far in my entire life.
I've got 200 of them started.
I usually write in my journal after my supplementary reading.
Lord, now that I've done my supplementary reading, I would like to do my supplementary prayer journaling before my supplemental prayer.
I don't know if any of y'all like this, but like I always think I'm going to do a prayer journal, right? But I can't just do it on like a steno pad. I got to get some kind of like leather bound thing from the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I'm looking through Amazon. I'm like, ooh, handcrafted leather, $60.
Lord, this book looks more holy.
That's for Jesus.
You get a look. And then you're like, I'm going to keep a lifetime of these. There'll be a big stack of them, and I'll hand them to my kids. And it'll be a great heirloom, and watch this, how God had created my life, you know? And then, like, here I am, like, ooh, but there's a socket set also on sale for $40. Maybe I'll have that shipped next day, Aaron, and think about this leather journal thing. Maybe a steno pad's all right.
Years ago, I think before we had any kids, we'd heard some radio program or something. Somebody had a book, Making Sunday Special, and their big thing is on Saturday, you know, kind of treat it like a Sabbath, and how all the work that went into preparing for the Sabbath, and their point was start early and you know, have a special dinner or whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's all about gearing toward, get ready for Sunday morning. So then you go Sunday morning, you're like, you're already primed, and you don't have to, quote, get in the mood, whatever. You're just there, right? And so Cheryl and I were like, yeah, we're going to do that, but we're not going to use our common crap. You know, we went out and shopping and like bought a special little crystal bowl. Or, I mean, just all this junk, you know, that made it like special, you know, our own little communion thing we did. And we did that for, I don't know, a month or something. And it was really cool. Then we got busy and then it was sat in a box for years. Yeah.
I think I've done that prayer journal, like I said, for 3 days. And it's because I was having difficulty hearing from God. And so if I have difficulty hearing from God, there's like 3 people that I go to. That are just like people that freak me out for Jesus. Like, I'm just like, wait a minute, God talked to you like that? They're like, yeah, it was a license plate, and then something happened with this, and then someone got out of their car, and I'm like, this must be Jesus. It's like, I don't know what you just said, but it worked because that's happened. And so, and they told me to do a prayer journal, and I said, yeah, I'm going to get on that. 3 days in, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to get on this.
Yeah. This doesn't seem right for me. Yeah.
But when I look back at those three days, all those prayers were answered. Yeah. So I have proof that it works.
Yeah.
I just am too stubborn to go back and do it.
Even now, you're like, yeah, it was very beneficial, but I don't know if I want to do it.
3 days of my life.
Right? I'm just like, hey, man, that was a pretty sweet deal. Like, I have the answers to the prayers. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
I ain't going to do that.
I don't think I want to do it again, though. Seriously, I lose the pen, and I'm like,
right? I'm like, do I have a leather-bound book or not?
Plus, it takes forever to be like, dear Lord, I'm praying for.
Our heavenly
my first entry said, God, I have no idea what to put here. And then I looked at that. I'm like, that is the most honest prayer I've ever done in my entire life.
It's even the technicality of it, because like the first page you'd been using dashes for your outline, and then you switched over to numerals on page 2, and then you look at it and you're like, oh man, it's not even the same. No, it looks stupid. I couldn't do a prayer journal.
Well, that's kind of crazy you said that, though. Like, you had wrote in a prayer journal, and then like 3 days later you saying it worth it. Like, you know, like we do have a thing with like not really remembering what God do for us, you know, so... I mean, like, and then it's like once you understand and you see, like, and God tend to be on the roll with you, you know, like he's so out for you once you see what he's doing,
yeah.
You know, so it's like if, like you said, I had the same problem, like if I see him working and I can be stubborn sometimes, it's like, why would I do that if I seen like he is so out for me, like if I do the things that he like, you know, like, and I just think that's crazy because I have a problem with that sometimes and, you know. I just like keeping the ball rolling, you know, but sometimes I tend to forget the things that he do.
Yeah.
You know, and that can kind of throw you off a little bit.
I have had that pop up numerous times where I thought, you know, I don't know what God's up to here. And then, like, if I spend any amount of time thinking, I'm like, oh, yeah, that, yes, that too, yep, sure, saw that. And, like, and it's, And then I at least sympathize, not in the way of, I guess I at least understand the failure of the Israelites, who are constantly having to be reminded, like, no, I'm the God that brought you out of Egypt. No, remember, a God that brought you out of Egypt, pillar of fire, fed you from the ground, water out of rock, that God. And you, they get 10 years out and they're doing stupid stuff and you're like, how could you forget? And I thought, oh yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah, see, that's unfair. Like, you know, we read that so foolishly, right? Like, 10 years ago was like two paragraphs for us. We're like, but I just read it how he just saved you out of there. And then like two paragraphs later, you're like, oh Lord, how have you forgotten us? You spoiled rotten Israelites, you know? But like, I mean, seriously, we will do that. You know, we'll see the Lord do a mighty thing. And then the next week we're like, I feel like God don't listen to me or listen to my prayers. And I'm like, he's just not being faithful to me.
Hey man, that's general Bible reading that we get wrong.
Yeah.
Because if we're reading through the Bible and we read about fools in the Bible and then we go, how are you doing this? You're terrible. We do this with Peter way too often.
Yes.
Every time you talk crap about Peter, you need to step back and realize you are Peter.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
Peter's talking about building tents. It's like, no, Peter, you wouldn't do that. I would do that exact thing. Like, hey, Jesus, this is a sweet deal. Let's make some tents so they can stay.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I would do.
You're the third guy in the room being like, Peter, say something. Well, that was stupid.
I don't even have the gall to say something to Jesus. I'm not one of the disciples just like, hey, man, Jesus, do you want us to like strike the lightning on that town and get them taken care of because they're messing up? And Jesus is like, no.
Yeah,
don't do that. No. And we're all like, hey, man, don't be stupid. Jesus can take care of that.
And you think to yourself, like, how deaf do you have to be having the who is the greatest conversation within earshot of Jesus Christ?
Hey man, I'm gonna sit at his right hand. My mom's gonna ask him.
And then like, and then even had to say it out loud. Hey, we were just wondering who was the greatest. we thought it might be one of us.
It's like, hey Jesus, I know how you love everybody. Like there's a whole bunch of us, but like, am I it?
I could be though. And like at least the guy who is it? You assume it's Luke, right? The guy who runs away buck naked when someone grabs
Mark,
the rope.
Isn't it Mark?
No, Mark. Yeah, sorry, yeah, Mark. It's Mark, right? So like. I think I would have done that if I got caught having the who's the greatest conversation in front of Jesus. He's like, hey, are you guys talking about who's the greatest? I just run away because I feel like I have no way to reconcile what I've been doing.
We didn't hear a word you said the last 3 years.
Hey, man, why was that dude just wearing a loincloth?
That's all they wear.
What?
It's the Middle East, boo. He's got like six layers on. You get a loincloth and a tunic. That's it.
Well, all right.
You get two. That's why the suggestion that if like takes your tunic, give him your thing also. Give him your tunic also. And you only got like two things to clothes on.
Yeah. His outer garment was at home with pillows underneath it, so his mom would think he was still sleeping.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That's
sneaking out with Jesus late night.
Hey man, I'm gonna go watch this thing go down.
He walked out.
I don't have time to get dressed.
He looked back at his pillow concoction. He's like, I am the greatest.
Jesus will pick me.
I'm heading out. I hope he goes taco truck.
We really do get that way messed up. I think that's one of the things that irritates me about my Sunday school upbringing, right? Is like it was always black hat, white hat. You know, like Pharisees are bad. The guys in Job are bad. Israelites are stupid. They don't realize, blah, blah, blah. But like if you actually get back and look at it, the Israelites are, you know, they actually show more faith than I do most of the time.
Right.
The Pharisees were just trying to make sure that they didn't cross a line. They cared enough about it to at least make some rules and try to keep them in force. Now, they did miss Jesus and they did miss grace because they misplaced where their ultimate loyalties were. But, like, they set up a system where they're like, we want to honor God. We're going to get three fences away from that so we can't even touch it. And then they made the mistake of worshiping that. That was their problem. But otherwise, their initial intention of trying to follow God of the Hebrews... I don't know. That's better than I do most of the time.
I'm just trying to follow the law.
Yeah, yeah. Peter runs his mouth like a crazed fool, but like when it's time to get on the water, he go.
Jesus.
Yeah, he go on the water, and I'd be like, I don't know, Jesus, you know, you could make a bridge because you're God. Can you just get the mountains to move closer?
Hey, man, can you send one of those big fish? I've heard you sent that before.
Yeah, I know your M.O. You do fishing, man, bridges. Yeah. And
lots of fish with money in their mouth. Let's work this out.
Jesus, you seem to be a god of fish. Just send me like a dolphin to ride or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely not black hat, white hat. It's a white hat and me. That's what it is.
All right. Wait, so do we tie up your discussion?
What was my question? What do you do when God doesn't answer? Just think about how you're as bad as Peter. Pray on that for a while, and you'll forget what you were even asking for.
At least I'm not that guy. Yes, I am. What's the down and dirty? What do you do when God doesn't answer?
I mean, most people panic first. Most people panic. And then, like, I think the first thing you should do is pray. Like, you got to pray yourself out of the hole, you know, so... Like, I was having a spiritual attack, I'd say, about 2 weeks ago. Like, around the time you was asking me, like, I was going through it, but, I mean, I was, you know, still holding up, but I didn't understand the full what was really going on. So it's like I Jesus guided me to start looking for stuff, like, what's going on, you know? And I found out, like, I was under a spiritual attack. So, you know, like, the first thing I did was panic, you know? And then I got to reading, and it's like, the first thing I should have done was prayer, you know, and that's the only thing that can really help you.
Yeah. Booba, you had that experience. So yeah, this is kind of lines up with your Pope stuff, or quasi Pope stuff.
So, well, do you want me to do the Pope style, yeah, or answer the question?
Yeah, it was a perfect segue, Booba. And then you're like, should I do the Pope style now?
Hey, man.
It was already set up. I mean, it was perfect. Like, we're running a legit program.
Guys, we've done this for years. When have I ever successfully landed on the other side of a good segue?
All I'm going to say is like, Ben said that, and I thought, we're going to do it. We're going to pull off a segue without being stupid and phony about it. And then here come Booba from left field.
I was on the edge of my seat.
Yeah.
I'm back,
hey, man,
now.
Here's the deal.
I'm back.
Once again, let's set up expectations and realize that I'm not going to hit
it. Is it time for me to do my poop style now?
All right. Congratulations, Ben, on a well-put segue.
I don't like it anymore.
Next. Boo to Booba for screwing it up. All right. One more thing. Within the last couple of months, something has happened within my life where I've been connected with a group of kids that are in a different country that are trying to get some stuff taken care of. On that deaf part is just something that's going on right now. She is joyous and she's incredible, and so an opportunity has arisen for her to be able to go to a school for the deaf and blind that's in this country. And it was a total long shot for her to be able to go to the school. It was nothing was correctly aligned up from a worldly perspective. She didn't know what she needed to know. She didn't have everything she needed. She wasn't going to know what she needed to know. Didn't have the resources to go. And so it was a total God thing if she was going to be able to go. It was completely him. And so I have been, myself and then a big group of people have been praying about that for a long time, trying to figure this out and see if this was something that God was going to lead us into and make happen. And so it's been a couple months since that started, and they actually have gone through a couple meetings that have given us a little bit more hope in her being able to go to the school and getting involved in that, and it's so amazing. We're so excited. And then the final meeting was today, where they went and they spoke to the headmaster of the school, and he loved her and loved her personality, loved her smile, which I would be astonished if he didn't. The eventual answer was, we don't have room for her. And so it had nothing to do with whether or not she was prepared. It had nothing to do with whether or not she had the resources. It was legitimately just the fact that she could not go to the school because they didn't have a room. And that was heartbreaking. I have... myself and a large group of people have cried and wept over this girl because we were so excited for what God could do for her. And this was one of the big things we were really working on and really hoping for. And I was told today that it didn't happen. And so for realistically about a minute, I sat there seething in anger. I mean, I haven't been that angry at God in a while. And I'm very happy that it only happened for about a minute. And that's probably a personal best for me, because I was upset. I was mad. I was really mad because I'm like, here's the deal, God. You know, we've been praying about this. This is something that you could do without even trying. This is something. What, they don't have enough room? Like, really? You're not strong enough to make it so that a school has room for this girl? You don't have the power to do this? Are you kidding me? And then maybe a minute later, I kind of just smacked myself upside the head and was like, yeah, that's the worst possible way you could take that. You are failing in your faith, and you are trying to put it as your will is better and more correct than God's. And I don't think there's ever a biblical place where that's a good place to be, on the other side of God's will and defying him from that perspective. And so I had to quickly deal with that and quickly deal with the fact that, like, here's the deal. Just because I had something and we all had something that we wanted God to do, and he didn't, doesn't mean that he doesn't love her and us more than we could ever even imagine. That's the first thing I had to reestablish was just because he didn't do this does not mean he does not love her, because he is her daddy and he loves her more than I could even imagine. And I know that. And so I had to reestablish that perspective of this is not a lack of love. Then I had to look at it from a worldly perspective of if God didn't want this to happen, was it the best thing? Was it the best timing? Is there something better waiting? Because I wholeheartedly believe in a God that looks at our worldly plans and goes, hey, I love your heart and I love what you're thinking about doing, but I've got something better. I've got something more important for them to do, or I've got something where this timing is not correct, or the school's just not right, or whatever that is. I wholeheartedly believe that God's bigger than that. God is big enough to look at our plans and say, hey, you know, I appreciate where you're going, but I've got something better, or I've got something different. And so I had to take a step back and look at that as well. Just because we had an idea of what the best plan was does not mean that it's true and does not mean that it lines up with God's will. So we have to be obedient to that. And so the third thing I had to run into was, how am I going to praise God for this? That was probably one of the toughest. Because I didn't really know. I didn't really know at first. You know, I've heard the cliche, hey, you know, you got to praise God through your storms and you've got to praise God through everything bad that happens and realize that he is still your eternal God and he is still the one who is in control of everything. How do you take a step back and, like, you really praise him for that? And so I kind of just started listening to some worship music. And I started praying, God, I'm trying not to be angry about this. I'm trying not to be upset because I know that you're her father and you love her and you will take care of her. I know you will. My heart's not in the right place and I need you to get it there. And I started singing and I started praying and I started praising God. And I was talking to the person that's my contact there, just started talking about the fact that, like, this is just possibly something that, you know, isn't the best thing for her, which means something better is coming. Luckily for me, I was able to go through all of that within a couple of minutes, which is definitely not the case for a lot of people, and which is definitely not the case for me most of the time. But for the sake of, I didn't want to waste any time angry at God when I could very easily be praying about what's the next best thing for her and how is he going to make this even better and even more perfect along with his will and his plan. And I didn't want to waste any time that I could have been praising him and more excited for her for something bigger. It was interesting to be able to take a step back and look at all of that and objectively break it down from what is my problem with this and how am I going to get over it. And I don't think it's going to be that easy for everybody, and it may not be those three steps. You know, I'm not trying to give you a three-step process to getting over hurt from God for not doing something you wanted him to do, but that's certainly what worked for me. And it's definitely something that maybe not from, like, a corporate perspective of breaking it down as my process, but looking at it as how I can do that for when I know I'll get an answer that I won't like again. And so my post-style advice to you is not follow my list, because I don't care what you follow. But you've got to realize that if God doesn't do something aligned with what you wanted, it does not mean he does not love you, or it does not mean that he's not a good father. It does not mean that he's upset at you or taking anything out on you. You have to realize that's not a personal thing against you. God is love, and that's a lot of times means he's not going to give us something that we want. We need to realize that he is not a genie. He is not a parent to spoiled children that he's just going to give us everything we want. He's going to love us and care for us and give us what we need. You do really have to break it down from the perspective of realizing that that God is still the God of the universe that is your Lord. He's your King, and you do have to find yourself in a place where you're praising him. It may not happen immediately. It may not be easy by any means. But God deserves praise. Like, that's simple what it is. He deserves our praise, no matter what situation we're in. Get yourself there, and it's not going to be easy. It's not always going
to
be easy.
Yeah, I think it's tough to be, to desire right things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there are things that I think we as humans, as part of being in the image and likeness of God, that we have that are innate. We have a sense of a desire for justice. We have a bent towards mercy. We have kind of this communal desire to share things with others,
like as we see God work in our lives, we want to share that with other people, and like there's certain worldly ways in which we want that expressed. And so like those desires are not implicitly bad things, but like Boov's right, like where we run into risk is where our perspective gets skewed, and as opposed to recognizing that these things that we feel or desire are part of kind of a reflection of how God has otherwise interacted with us, and then we think we've got to better handle it than God himself does. You know, perhaps I love better than God loves. Perhaps I have a better sense of justice than God has. Perhaps he's not paying attention the way that I do, right? And so, like, we don't intend to think it that way, but that's really what we're saying, is that, like, if I were God, I would have done this differently. And the very fact that it got done differently validates that you should not be God, because obviously God has made the right choice here and you have not. And it doesn't mean that it's not something that God doesn't might not weep over, right? Or that he doesn't have a reaction to. And it doesn't always, like, the truth, what was hard is that it doesn't always end up in something that he's got something better by our standard of better.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I can't reasonably say that. Anybody's death, when you've been praying for a healing, or we've been praying for impoverished children, or like whatever, it's bigger or larger circumstances than that, it doesn't always be like, oh, well, something better's coming. Maybe it's not. But still, God is good. Still, he loves better than I love. He knows better than I know. And that's why our it's weird. We'll fight to make sure people know that we don't have a works-based righteousness. That it is because of our relationship with Jesus and what Jesus has done that changes our state. But then when confronted with a reality that says, can I trust in who God is as opposed to the validation of what he's done in my own eyes? And that's where we start. That's what we start doing. We say, well, God, if you don't do this, I'm going to be pissed. Or maybe you're not a good God if you don't do the things that I think are good. And like that violates basic premises, things that we obviously understand about, if I was perfect, then I would be qualified to be God. But because I'm not, certainly God will do things differently than I would. Otherwise, that would validate me as a deity.
See, I feel like that's actually better than most of Christianity. Is even the fact that you were upset, right? Like, here's what I see most of the time. I see prayers for things, and then when it doesn't happen, they go, okay, that's okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, the reaction, the reason that you're upset is because you wholeheartedly believe that God could have done something, and he chose not to, right? Where I think actually the much bigger problem is most people will pray for things, and this is me included, will pray for things, and then when it doesn't happen, I'm like, yeah, okay, no big deal. Like, I didn't think God was actually going to do anything in the first place. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I'm not saying that it's a feather in anybody's cap to be angry at God, but, like, if the thing that you were praying for and your knee-jerk reaction is to be, why didn't you do that? Right? That means you had enough faith in him that he could have done it in the first place, which I think actually a lot more people don't have. Now, you're right. You got to get over that, Jess. Right? You're a fool. Right? Well, but like, no one gets mad at somebody that is not capable of doing it anyway. I don't look at my dog and say, hey, I thought I told you to pay the mortgage. You know what I'm saying? And then boot him and be like, I've had enough of this. But like, I will look at my wife the same way and say, hey, man, we were supposed to pay the mortgage. I'm a little upset because you're fully capable of doing it and you did not. Being mad at the dog, not reasonable. Wife, capable, reasonable, right?
This also shows our very small perspective, though. You know, we weep over the story of one little girl because you have some emotional investment, you know, and you've been praying, and like, you know that girl. She's across the globe, right? And you know enough about that girl to think, I really care about this girl, and I really want what's best for her. God, however, knows the story of all the other little girls that are in that school already. You know, that we don't know. We don't know their names. We don't know their story. We don't know how he got them there. Mm-hmm. We don't know, you know. So which one of them needs to go out so that she can come in? you know, and that's just the perspective. The emotions are raw and they're real. And he knows that, and he appreciates that, I think. But it also shows our lack of perspective. And maybe that's why we do say, well, okay, because God, with me anyway, when God says no, or God says that, you know, I'm just not going to do this, I know he has a bigger perspective, and I don't get it. I don't like it.
Right.
I hurt. I weep. I groan inwardly, but I still know he did what was right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you just kind of go, okay, and you'll still continue praying. You know, who knows? Because he can still finagle something. But it's just the bigger perspective that I was thinking through the whole thing. I think, well, all those little girls, boys, whoever's in this school,
yeah,
have a story too. And I don't know what that is.
Right.
Yeah, I think one of the most hardest things that we got to understand and hopefully solidify is being comfortable with being stretched. You know, like God stretches us in wide length. So, you know, like Dan said, like you never know the situation with the other girls. And then mm-hmm. you got to always believe because God can change things in the blink of an eye.
Right.
Like that can happen today and then tomorrow they can be like, well, we found the house to come live at and, you know, like a school and everything. Like, it's just, you know, like not really giving up on God, but, mm-hmm. you know, like, but you did the right thing by, you know, changing the way you thought. And, you know, you had that fence set up like, okay, you listen to the music and, you know, that's kind of what I do. You know, like if I feel uncomfortable with a situation and I know like the world is taking over, like I do things to put my man back on track. Like, mm-hmm. and that's one of the things that I would have did was, you know, put in some nice little tunes and let that kick in and, you know, calm down and just, you know, just get comfortable with being stretched.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's move with Pope style advice.
I'm pro angry.
I don't know. David seemed to be right. Like, I mean, if you look at the expression in a lot of that, it's dealing with God, kind of on the terms, Mike, that you're talking about.
Yeah, I get it. I know that's a real hard line to toe. You know what I'm saying? I'm not, and like, because that can very easily be prideful anger. But there's just God had full option to make you a mindless drone and did not. You know what I'm saying? For all the parts of his character that are wrapped up in that, God, you know, when Christ weeps for things, he weeps for things. And like,
right.
There's part of his ingrained character within people where you weep for other people. And like, I don't see how logically it's not okay to say you could have done something and you didn't. And I'm disappointed and maybe I'm not pissed at you, but I am pissed. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, absolutely.
All that seems reasonable to me because God had totally option to not give you that and he gave it to you. And I you're right. The thing that I think I would have a harder time with is what you're saying is like is praising your way back out of that. I know people say that. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like sometimes I think we settle for phony. You know what I'm saying? We're like, I mean, if you angry and hurting, I'd be there until you ain't. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And you can pray your way out of that. And the Holy Spirit is absolutely there to help you through that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, worship music it's always solid. But like sometimes I catch people hiding in there. Hiding in that worship music, like it done changed something, and your mind is still, your heart is exactly where it was, and you phonied your way out of that, and then you secretly still mad at God. You do that for a couple years, you're going to find yourself not in relationship with God.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You got to deal with that stuff. I'm not saying this is you, Bubba, but I'm saying like you got to do that stuff honestly, right? Like there's no reason to religionize your way out of that thing. You deal with the Creator, you deal with the Holy Spirit. If you mad, you say, "Look, I'm mad." And I love you, and I know you're good, but I'm mad. I'm mad right now. And that's okay. That is
right.
That is okay, because that is your option.
There have been times that I've gotten in scream fits with God before. Like,
oh, boo, I'm sorry, that's wrong. Yeah, everybody, that's wrong.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, we're talking about regular, normal behavior, and you're like off the rails.
Well, and what I'm saying is I've been in a place before where I've – like, gotten to my knees screaming, punching stuff because I was so mad at God. And that is the kind of anger that I was not
right on.
Right with. Like, I was, not to get the whole story, but like, in front of Mercy Hospital one point in time, I was on my knees cursing God, screaming, like, cussing up a storm at him, all this different stuff, saying I didn't believe in him, he was useless, worthless, and all this different stuff. That is where I've been before.
Sure.
And I'm very glad that this was a different kind of anger that I was in. Because it was, you're absolutely right, it was, you could fix her entirely if you wanted to. You could make it to where she wouldn't even need to go to the school if you wanted to. And what I was asking for was her to go to the school, and you didn't. But that's why within, you know, a minute I was out, because I was just like, you know what, that's real, that is exactly how I feel right now, but he's still right.
Right on. Yeah, that's solid. I think you can be mad as long as you have... As long as you have the right perspective, right?
Yeah,
it's
awesome.
Okay to have your feelings and be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's completely healthy. Because like I said...
You can't fake it with God. It's not like you can be mad and say, well, God, thank you. And you're like boiling on the inside. He's like, well, he snowed me.
Exactly. What are you gaining by phoning it in? That's exactly right, Dan. Yeah.
God has thrown my anger back in my face before. and laughed at me in a good way, not in like in a oh, ha ha you silly little human.
Not the way we laugh at
yeah,
you.
Exactly, not the way you guys laugh at me. But like, he's made a mockery of my anger before, and it's done nothing but made it more constructive when I feel that way about something. When I'm able to get to that point where I'm so emotionally invested in something that I want him to do or his people or something like that, where I can get that anger back, but it's for the perspective of like I really wanted something to happen for his children or I wanted something to happen within my life. Yeah, he's taken the other part of that anger and just thrown it back in my face and said, "You puny little man, like you think you are tough and you are strong and you are powerful, but you are nothing. You are absolutely nothing, and your anger does not scare me."
You've been listening to Life from the Path. Hey, thanks for hanging with us so far tonight. Hey, just wanted to let you know the new Light 45 video is out for Steeped. They were talking about it on the show where they went down to Florida and stuff. And I was at work, right? So I don't have the volume up, but like they're trapped in something, and then they break out and do some jamming in a barn.
You got to watch the whole video. I don't want to spoil it for you, but Critter is trapped in a box.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
was he hit by some woman at a pancake house?
No, he's in a pallet.
Okay,
pallet box,
shanty pallet box.
Yeah. Anyway, go check that out. Go to if you go to the Light 45 Facebook page, they got it uploaded there. You can take a watch of it. And anyway, those guys are just real excited to see what they were doing. Actually, after they left here the following week, they were playing on the their local news, like CBS station or something. And then they're still within the top five on the Christian rock Billboard charts.
Top five Christian rock. I mean, that's uptown.
Awesome. That's what we do.
That's uptown living.
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys, I'm excited for what they got going on. So go support them. Go to light45.com and go find their Facebook page. You can watch, take a look at that new video. And of course, we've got the acoustic performances from the show that are sitting out on our website at livefromthepath.org.
Hey, man, the acoustic performance of The Maze is it's excellent.
Stellar.
I mean, all the songs they did that night were good, but like, I mean, The Maze is just, it was really, really good.
Yeah.
Okay. Dear Life from the Path, 45 years ago, I had a mistress. Ooh, Nicaris, you don't like that? No, that ain't the way to live. My wife knew about her. Both of our spouses have now passed. I have found her address on the internet, and I'm debating if I should contact her. What do you think? Unsure in Iowa.
I'm sorry, I found her address
on
the internet.
Yeah, that is creepy. No matter what you do, no.
I just Google searched mistresses I used to have, and this came up.
I looked back in my mistress file.
I don't know. Why not?
He's yeah, not, I mean,
spouses have passed away.
Still creepy.
Well,
I don't know.
I'm not saying, like, I'm not against it from the perspective of, like, hey, you were married and all that different stuff. I'm just against it because it's
no,
a creepy deal.
Here's why this is no good. This woman has caused you to throw away what you swore was important to you already once.
Ooh, good point.
Right? You cannot be trusted with this woman. That's it. That's why I think it's a problem. I mean, if you're talking about technicalities and on a divorce / widow level, which as far as God's law is concerned, I don't know. I suppose you're fine. You know, I don't know. That's a real oddball situation. But as far as I can see, you chose to be a certain kind of man. This lady come along, you abandoned that man, and then had to revert back to where you came from. I don't
think
how
many
good.
Years earlier? I mean, what she's
45 years ago.
45 years.
There's a chance that someone's changed within 45 years.
No.
Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility this gal has changed and he's changed.
Okay, tell me this. The man has changed. As soon as his wife dies, he's Googling his mistress. Does this sound like a high quality
immediately?
Bond formed?
He said, since then, both our spouses have passed. You
because
know
if
that
he
it's
said,
been 3 months?
Yeah, there may have been rat poison involved.
He's been waiting for her spouse to die.
Keeping up on the obituaries?
Yeah, how does he know that?
That's true, they haven't been in contact. Okay, that's a good point.
How many mistresses do you keep up on for 45 years?
He's fired on her on Facebook.
Yeah, technology, he could have just ran across it. Google, like you say.
You
like,
don't just run across it. You intentionally hunt it down.
Here's the deal, boys. We're not going to have a bunch of discussion on this. We're doing a straight yay or nay vote.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going with nay. I think this is a bad idea. Nick Harris.
Bad idea.
Nick Harris, nay. Buva.
Nay.
Go for it, baby!
Dance up, do it! He's a solid Dance positive. A. Yes, someone that has train wrecked your life before, invite him in. What can it hurt 45 years later?
They're probably in their 60s.
Are you saying that people aren't very dangerous in their 60s, Dan? Because it's slowly approaching.
Maybe 70s, probably. I don't know.
Here is a secular's advice. Because you are both now unencumbered, I don't see any reason why you shouldn't.
It's the worst way.
Clearly, you have things in common and a lot of shared history.
Now, just understand.
Love,
it's
Dan
not
going
to be as exciting this time around. It was naughty before, and that's what made it exciting to you. And that was bad, and hopefully you've changed. Just understand, you're getting into a real relationship now.
I don't know how you're for this, Dan. This seems like such a terrible idea.
Hey, man, no longer encumbered is the grossest way to put that. Does that mean when you're...
Doesn't there just seem something sleazy about, you are the lady that I cheated on my wife with. As soon as my wife dies, we get together. That seems wrong. It just seemed wrong. In my gut and my left toe, it hurts me.
Hey, man, my left toe's a tingling. That's okay.
All right, here we go. Next one. Oh, boy. This has to do with anyway. Dear Life from the Path. We are well into school summer vacation, filled with days by the pool, trips to the zoo, and plenty of time for kids to goof off around the house. This extended leisure time for the kiddos may be a good time to remind parents to be thoughtful about what they post on the social media.
Great, an open letter to everybody. Go ahead.
Some basics, why I'm great. When your child accidentally dumps all the sunscreen from your beach bag onto the car floor, you do not have to post a picture of a regretful crying toddler to prove that he really did it this time. When your child falls off her bike and gets a great big scrape on her forearm, you do not have to post a picture of the scrape for the world to see. When your child is running through the backyard sprinkler without clothes on, you do not have to post a picture to let us know. Live from the Path, please encourage your readers and listeners to have a memorable, safe, and exciting summer, but to keep those photos to themselves.
What? Sincerely, someone who cares way too much about what other people post on social media.
Dear person I don't like. Why don't you mind your own business?
I was going to say, it's going to be a quick one.
You have misunderstood social media completely.
How dare you post something that means something to you and not me?
Yeah, it's not called whatgreglikes.com. It's called stuff everybody likes to put on about the family. Now, I agree with the naked baby stuff. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I just wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. There's crazy creepos on the net. It just ain't worth it. I don't care how cute it is. Keep that to yourself. Show it to your sister.
Hey, man, spilling all the stuff on the floor, though, that's funny.
Yeah, that is funny.
I mean, are they worried that you're shaming a young child?
It sounds like it.
Because if your child is that young, he shouldn't be on a social media anyway. Greg. I don't like Greg. I think Greg thinks very highly of his own opinion. This is an odd letter. Anybody want to support Greg?
Nope.
No. Straight zeros for Greg. Okay, let's hear Secular's response to this amalgam of greatness. Dear Greg, we'll call him. You obviously don't want the children put at risk or shamed. Some people feel a compulsion to record everything a kid does for the world to see because their child is so special and unique. Unfortunately, we seem to have reached a point in our culture that nothing is private anymore. I'll print your suggestion to parents, but while I applaud your wanting to protect their children, it's their job. If the photos bother you, ignore them and keep scrolling.
I agree entirely with the last part.
I don't understand what she said, though. She said about the protecting the children. Read that part again.
Let's see. It says, I'll print your suggestion to parents, but while I applaud your wanting to protect their children, it's their job.
Oh, it's their job. Yeah. You're highlighting it differently.
Oh, it's their job.
It's their job. You're saying it's their job. This is their job. That's what we're supposed to be saying.
See, if I did more supplemental reading, this would be better.
Yeah, that's right. Where is your supplemental reading at, Mike?
Pay attention to your own kids, man. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, we are a family of 6 children. Our elderly mother lives with us, each of us, 3 to 10 months a time.
What?
Okay, hold on. Our elderly mother lives with each of us 3 to 10 months.
So they're all
time.
Adult children.
We got pass it. Okay. Around our mom.
Dad's picking it up.
That's a wide disparity of time. Go ahead.
Out of the 6 of us, only one is a homemaker who has the room and ideal setting for her to live comfortably. However, she refuses to have mom permanently. The rest of us have jobs that don't allow us to be with her during the day. Yet we all agreed that putting mom in a nursing home would be out of the question. If I didn't have to work, I'd take care of her permanently myself. Oh, yeah, a bit. I admit that she can be difficult to live with. She can cut you down, insist you do all kinds of errands, and is suspicious about someone taking her money. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do.
Keep passing around. I have an idea.
I've done my obligatory 4 months with Ma. You take her.
Yeah.
Don't worry. She'll be dead soon enough. You can get on with your life.
If you guys are going to bicker about keeping her for 3 to 10 months at a time, why is a nursing home out of the question?
So I was having this conversation with somebody the other day. Like, you know when you're a kid and you're around adults and, like, up until a certain age, you're just like, whatever they say is solid. You're like, yeah, that sounds good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds good. And then let's say, you know, 10 years later and you haven't seen them in a while, you run into, like, your uncle or your cousin or something. And then and they say stuff and you're like, you know what? I don't agree with you anymore. The stuff that you're saying sounds stupid. You know, sometimes, while you can respect and honor your mother and father, she's an old lady and you're a grown man. So when she cut you down, you got to be like, that's not true for me right now, Ma. It doesn't matter what you say about me. I know I'm not a bum. Everything's fine. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a place to honor your mother. But if, like, if you're still letting her chides and disparaging comments control you as an adult, there's something wrong with you.
My mama has a lot of emotional power over me. Still.
Yeah, yeah. And the weird part is when you're like, hey, if I were a stay-at-home dude, I would watch mom all the time. No, yeah, you would not.
You would. You sound terrible.
You are purposely not a stay-at-home man because you don't want that to happen. You're very obvious in your very sheer sheet of ghosts that you're wearing.
Well, I hate to disappoint this family, but their mom is showing some early signs of dementia, and they're going to be caring a lot more for her soon.
You think the cutting down is a part of a dementia?
I think the accusing people of stealing things is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds right.
Really, they should be really taking care of mom, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, think about all the sacrifices mom made, you know? 12 o'clock at night, changing diapers. Like, people don't remember these times.
Calling me an idiot when I was 3 months old.
Yeah, you
Peter diaper, you idiot.
Pictures of my stuff spilled in the car.
You trying to hide all my money in that diaper, I know it.
Yeah.
And video me like naked running to the backyard, printing it on Facebook.
Okay, let's see what Secular has to say. Wait, he says, the question was basically, I don't know what to do. Everyone's advice is, keep on keeping on.
Suck it up, big boy.
Yeah, you can't just, like, the crux of the problem is that they're saying, hey, there's a homemaker, someone whose family has made it so that this woman could stay home, and your reaction is to say, well, she should then be responsible for the mother all the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, that is the wrong, you've come to the wrong conclusion.
Okay. Secular says, has your mother always been this way? If so, then perhaps it's time for another family meeting. To expect one sister to shoulder the entire burden of taking in a demanding, suspicious parent is unfair to her. If there have been changes in your mother's personality, consider having her be neurologically evaluated to see if there's something wrong with her. I read that right.
You did.
A geriatric psychiatrist
Whoop.
Could give you some helpful input regardless of whether she's ill and help you decide upon a workable, permanent living situation for her. I don't think there's a permanent living situation for her. I think round robin's probably the best way to go. It sounds like, you know what I'm saying? If you can only take so much of it, you know, every 3-4 months,
yeah,
mom be shipping off.
3 to 10 months at a time means one of the siblings has a lot of patience, and a couple of them have no patience.
Yeah.
Three months of mom, she's out.
Out of 6 kids, there's usually one that's kind of like the lovey one, the homemaker, the family, keep the family together person, and that person ain't even stepping forward and being like, she can live with me. I mean, there's got to be something going on
that's
there,
true.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, let's do one more.
Yep.
Dear Life from the Path. Uh-oh. No. No, we're not reading that one.
That's too much, huh?
Not reading that one. Nope, not reading that one either. The first one had to do with two fellas whose relationship's on the rocks because they're having career difficulties. Like, one person wants to go get a job over here and gets a job over here. Okay. The other one was something about grandma cooking cake. It didn't make any sense. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path. We do best with old people. I recently retired, but I haven't told anyone. Yes.
I love this guy.
I receive widow's benefits, so I'm comfortable financially. I like my privacy, and I'm afraid things will change if I tell people about my retirement. My father is dying of cancer. My best friend says if I were her sister, she'd be mad at me. My sister lives a mile away, and I don't want her dropping in on me. If she knew, she'd include me in everything she does. I feel this is my life, and I want to enjoy it alone for the most part. Am I wrong? Am I hurting anyone? I was widowed 20 years ago, and I've had no serious relationship since. You should look up your ex-flings.
Do you have any ex-misters?
I'm independent, attractive, and have joined a few dating sites.
Well, then.
Did you say attractive?
But I am picky, and I have not met a man who attracts me. Holding it in.
This is wonderful.
I'm 66, in good health, and look younger.
Yes.
Am I being selfish? Do you have any advice for me? What the heck was all that extraneous information for? Yeah.
Why did she tell us her dad has cancer? Why do we care if she's pretty or has been on dating sites?
The question is, you retired, you don't want to tell people, is that wrong? But you are also apparently have a dad who's not well. You're super hot for 66. You have big money. I don't understand any of this stuff.
Here's my suggestion, all right? She needs to let people know she retired because she's obviously spending too much time at home alone.
Staring in the mirror.
Yeah, exactly. She's confused.
Oh, Ethel, you look great.
Yeah, she needs to get out and have a life and let people enjoy it with her.
This always amazes me when people write in with these questions like, I'm telling a lie right now. Should I keep up on that lie? Or just tell the truth? Because the truth seems hard.
Well, she's not even lying. She's just not saying.
Hey, man, I love everything about me. Am I full of myself? Yeah. You're alive in the path?
Yeah, but it is a lie. Like, isn't a lie by, what's that called?
Omission?
Yeah. You're just not bringing it up because I don't want my sister dropping by. Why don't you just say, hey, sis, don't drop by.
Yeah,
I'm retired.
As long as she doesn't ask the specific question of, have you retired yet? I don't have to lie to her.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm not, you know, I haven't walked around this morning saying, hey, I had Cheerios for breakfast. Doesn't mean, you know, I did. But,
yeah, but.
So I'm not lying.
Damn, I don't know.
I feel like not telling someone what you had for breakfast and not explaining to your family
something
huge has happened in your life.
Yeah, Dan's going to win this one because I'm not very smart. But there's something very fishy about what you're saying, Dan. about the Cheerios and the retiring secretly. There's something on them. It ain't right.
It just seems like she's selfish. Like she don't really want to help anyone but herself.
She wants to be a loner. She wants to just kind of, that's not she's weird.
She's willing to say, I'm not going to tell my family and friends that I'm retired for the sake that I want to spend time on my own. But she is not willing to say it and then just tell them, hey, I'd like to spend time on my own. She's taking the lazy way out.
She doesn't want to bother with her dad who's dying. She wants to let her family take care of that.
Yeah, she's trying to take the lazy way out because she wants to spend no time with people, but she doesn't want to have to inconvenience herself by explaining to them that she does not want to spend time with her.
She's got a lot of cats.
Tell your family that you retired and then deal with the backlash of, hey, why haven't you told us? We'd like to spend time with you. And then just tell them, well, I don't want to spend time with you if you want to be that angry, old, apparently good-looking 66-year-old curmudgeon.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's going to have to face it sooner or later. Exactly. I mean, at some point.
Yeah. At 90, you're still working?
Oh, no.
No, I actually retired 30 years ago.
See, when I was hot.
Back when I was a looker.
This is the thing that irritates me the most. It's like, it's proven that, like, your words mean absolutely nothing. Like, your actions mean something, right? And so this always drives me crazy when people are like, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to be, this is the things I want to accomplish, and you've made no actions to step that way. So, like, let's say you really mean it, that you're retiring and you don't want a bunch of people dropping by. Retire, tell everybody, and then say, I don't want you coming over here. In the meantime, you buy a taser. And when they come over, you tase them.
Yeah.
Taser? Do you know why? Because your actions speak louder than your words. People are like, I don't want you coming over. Sounds like, please come over. But when you come over and tase people, they know you mean business.
Get yourself a cattle prod and get them off your lawn.
That's right. Now, when I say I don't want you dropping by here, I don't want you dropping by here, a.k.a. taser.
Booby trap your whole house just in case they get in.
Well, fact that people don't know she's retired says she has no real relationships anyway. I mean, how do you not know?
You know? Yeah, yeah. I mean, Chuck goes to work every day, and then Chuck no longer goes to work every day.
Hey, I drove past your house at like 11:30, and your car was still there. Not working today? Oh, no, just sick.
Not today.
You think she's keeping up the ruse, like driving off at 7:30 in the morning?
Sandy, I'm 66. I can work from home.
She's like sitting at the Waffle House for 8 hours and then driving home?
I really hope no one notices that I'm not
still
at work.
Still working. All right, Secular's advice to round out the night. Secular says, if your sister has shouldered the responsibility of caring for your dying father by herself, thinking you are too busy working to help, then she would have every reason to be very angry.
Get it?
True.
Even if that's not the case, her feelings will be hurt when she finds out, and she will, that you're avoiding her. If she didn't love you, she wouldn't want to include you in her life. All you need to do is say no to her invitation if the activity isn't your cup of tea. And surely you can find a tactful way to ask any drop-in visitor to make plans with you ahead of time instead of dropping in.
Taser.
Flip-tick taser. Taser. You say you want to enjoy your life alone for the most part, but you have joined dating sites. In this life, people have to give in order to get. It may be the attitude you're projecting that's keeping you from meeting men on those dating sites. And yes, I think you are selfish.
Yes! That is the harshest Secular has ever been.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Dear Greg, you're a boob.
Stop it. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us this week. You can catch past clips from the show at Live from the Path. PathWaysStudios.org, including those aforementioned music videos from Light 45 and a special section of the website devoted entirely to Nick's Corner. Friendly bits of advice and discussion from Nick Harris. We've not really populated the content, but we're going to work on it.
I fell in love.
and actually, so we'll be back with you next week. And actually, we got a band.
I was going to say, who's coming in?
I think Michael Reed Band's in next week. And I think Brett Risley's in. And so, hey, it should be a great show next week. Well, we may even do it live. We'll see if I can work out our technical problems. In the meantime, be faithful to the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Pack.